Good afternoon. It's Monday, the 15th of October, 2018, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to the programme. Welcome to UK Column News. Welcome to the programme. Patrick Henningsen joining me in the studio today. And shortly, we will also be speaking to Dr. Graham Downing. But Patrick, lots going on. And I think I want to get started with this. Now, the BBC is covering chemical weapons on Panorama tonight. They're saying when Abdul woke up on the 4th of April 2017, he never thought that it would be the last time he would see his wife and children. Panorama's analysis of reported chemical attacks suggests 106 took place in Syria, all in the 4 years since disarmament. This, of course, is when the Russians helped remove or at least verify that there were no chemical weapons left in Syria. So Panorama claiming this. Patrick, it seems to me to be somewhat of a coincidence, therefore, that in Europe today they are meeting for the Foreign Affairs Council. This is the foreign ministers of all the European member states getting together. So let's have a listen to what Federica Mogherini had to say about that, first of all.
Happy to host the foreign ministers of our six Eastern partners. We will have a ministerial session with them during the afternoon and then a working dinner with them. The Eastern Partnership is a key part, a key component of our foreign policy. And this minister.
Okay, so the Eastern Partnership is a key component of EU foreign policy, Patrick. But she didn't really say what it was about. So maybe Jeremy Hunt can give us a clue.
We also firmly believe that we can find a deal on that basis that works for the European Union and our partners and friends in Europe. And today's a very good example of why that partnership is so important, because we have agreed a sanctions regime for people who use chemical weapons. Remember, this is the first year in British history that we've had chemical weapons used on British soil, and our friends in Europe and indeed outside Europe have stood behind Britain to say this cannot be allowed to happen. And I think that's a good example of why that partnership is so important to all of us.
So that was following on from a meeting that Jeremy Hunt had. So let's just have a look at some of the pictures of these idiots meeting in Europe. But anyway, a sanctions regime on chemical weapons is being tabled by the UK and France in the wake of Syria and Salisbury attacks, they say. And it's going to be adopted formally this afternoon at the Foreign Affairs Council. And this follows lobbying efforts from the UK and close partners. So Jeremy Hunt will be thanking, well, in fact, he did this on yesterday, I believe, 8 foreign ministers at the Evening House for their support over this. That's ministers from Poland, Czech Republic, Hungary, Slovakia, Slovenia, Bulgaria, Croatia and Romania. So they joined Jeremy Hunt for this little get together to say what a great thing it would be to attribute blame for various things. He, as I say, is taking that to the Foreign Affairs Council to deal with that. Jeremy Hunt said for years there's been an international taboo on the use of chemical weapons, but that is at the risk. Is at risk now after Syria and Salisbury. We now need to redraw the red line that says that for anyone using these horrific weapons, the price will always be too high. So my question, Patrick, is what a coincidence it is that the BBC has decided to push out Panorama today on this issue, when this is being discussed in the Foreign Affairs Council. And I seem to remember the last time there was a similar coincidence over Panorama was Saving Syria's Children. There was going to be a vote in the House of Commons over whether we bomb Syria. So Panorama seems to be surrounded by coincidences in this area.
And I think it's important to note that both of those instances that you've pointed out, Mike, the timing of the Panorama programs and the major international decision or meeting with regards to chemical weapons, those are both coincidences, Mike. I just want to make that very clear. There's nothing untoward going on there. There's no coordination. There's no streamlining of messaging going on, Mike. It is purely a coincidence. I don't know where you're getting these crazy ideas, Mike. It sounds like a conspiracy theory.
Well, let's have a look, because perhaps I get a clue from this. This is Strategic Culture International. Strategic Culture website. And the headline here is Britain on the leash with the United States, but at which end? And this is, James George Jatras. He's a former Republican Senate leadership person, whatever the word would be for that.
Diplomat.
A diplomat, okay. So he's published this analysis a couple of days ago. He's saying that a massive coordinated hybrid campaign of psyops and political warfare conducted not by Russia, but against Russia, concocted by the UK and its deep state collaborators in the United States, must stop. He said, but for far too long, largely for reasons of historical inertia and elite corruption, we've allowed the British government to exercise undue influence on US global policies in a manner not conducive to our own national interests. And it goes on, and I strongly recommend that everybody goes and has a look at that article. It's extremely interesting. But the question is, because many people view this as this relationship between Britain and the United States as being the opposite, that it's Britain doing the bidding of the great US empire. But in fact, he's suggesting that's not quite how it is. And perhaps this gives us a clue here, Patrick, because you found this article in the Mirror. We apparently missed it. Vladimir Putin ordered Novichok assassin to murder British spy behind Trump sex dossier. And what seems to be here, the case here is that, first of all, we've got a nice big picture of Christopher Steele once again, the new celebrity spook that has just been given a Vanity Fair Influential Person Award. But this seems to be the first mainstream acknowledgement that Sergei Skripal was involved with the dossier that Christopher Steele wrote, which is attempting to bring down Trump.
Yeah, so this is a good example. Look at this media story. Go back to this Mirror story. This is a good example of, these stories most of the time are planted in the mainstream media, the tabloids being the most obvious, but they also plant stories into the BBC. So a Russian defector, well, you can't imagine who would be handling a Russian defector, Mike. I'm sure it's they're just working independently and moving around, talking to editors. I'm sure they don't have any handlers in the intelligence services. Tells the Mirror that, Sergei Skripal was targeted by Putin for working on the Steele dossier. So what they've done there, Mike, is a bit of a limited hangout or sort of co-opting a narrative which has been simmering under the surface, which is there is a relationship between, via MI5 Pablo Miller, there is a relationship between Sergei Skripal, Orbis, Christopher Steele, and any other names you want to throw in there in terms of this little confab of this private intelligence industry involved in putting together this fake, a forged Trump dossier, which was then handed by none other than John McCain, who was the emissary in that little scam. One of the great things that he did in the last couple of years. And then that was presented to the press via BuzzFeed and CNN and ran with it and others. It was a totally forged document, a fake, a fantasy document. But there it is, Sergei Skripal and Christopher Steele. How does the Mirror spin that? Putin ordered the hit, the Novichok hit. So there's a bit of a part of it is true. The important part they're inferring is true, Mike. The rest of it is propaganda spin, and this is what the mainstream media does so well.
Now, I'm particularly upset to put this next one up here, Patrick, because this is now the second time in about the last 2 weeks that we've said something positive about Owen Jones. But here is a tweet that he's pushed out, which seems to echo what you've just said, because you said that there were influencers within the mainstream media that may have been handled by intelligence services in this country. And Owen Jones seems to be saying exactly that in this tweet. A 2000 article reveals Coughlin was fed material by MI6 for years, which he then turned into Telegraph news articles. It's pretty unprecedented for mainstream journalists to be attacking each other in this way, isn't it?
It isn't, especially laying out or hanging out what Owen Jones is in this epic thread. If you look on Twitter, go to Owen Jones' Twitter account and check out this long, extensive thread. I mean, he includes everything from sort of fake stories about Saddam Hussein training the 9/11 hijackers, Mike. But those are actual fake, planted, fake government official conspiracy theories that were planted, planted in major media outlets, newspapers, television, broadcast networks on both sides of the Atlantic in order to fabricate a fake case with fake news against or connecting Saddam Hussein to the attacks of 9/11 in order to justify a war based on fake fake mainstream media and government pretenses. I keep saying this word fake, Mike. It just comes, rolls right off the tongue. So we have intelligence services planting fake intelligence, fake points into the mainstream media. And we've been talking about this, Mike, for how long?
A long time.
A decade or more. But now mainstream elite sponsored journalists and are breaking ranks, like Owen Jones, who are speaking out against this. So we'll see. Owen Jones is probably going to have to do some penance for that, Mike. I can't imagine what that he's going to have to be required to do next week, whatever charity event. I don't know, but it'll be something. It'll be, because he's definitely, he's thrown a big turd in the punch bowl there.
So, you know, the question is, what is this? That's what is going on at the moment? Well, this is what we're witnessing is the rapid response mechanism. This was announced by Theresa May formally at the G7 in June. And what's it all about? First of all, you attribute blame. You don't have to prove anything. You just have to attribute blame. And then you have a common narrative. And that's across governments. So now we're now including the Eastern Partnership of the EU into that. We're bringing them in to reinforce this rapid response mechanism. But the really concerning aspect, because you expect government to behave badly, that's what governments do. But the media is supposed to be there to make sure that they can't get away with it. But the media has been brought into this rapid response mechanism. And that is the issue of major concern here. So we're talking about attribution of blame and a common narrative.
Mm-hmm. Those are the two important parts, Mike. That's all you need to make this rapid response mechanism work, right? Attribution of blame and streamline a common narrative across G7 countries, across NATO member states. And that way you have a unified message. So it doesn't matter, Mike, whether that message is accurate. It doesn't matter whether that represents reality or whether it's true. What matters is that everybody's on the same page, Mike. Yeah. So in a sense, in terms of Europe, you have one Soviet, nice Soviet system of messaging, in other words. So why would individual sovereign nation states, Mike, have to read off each other's hymn sheets? That's a whole question. On its own.
Yes. We were going to bring Graham Downing onto the program at this point, but I think we've lost him. Graham, are you there? No, you're here. Okay, well, unfortunately, we seem to have no video. I'm not quite sure why that is. Let's move on. We'll see if we can cope with this somehow. But look, we wanted to talk about vaccines here, and this is a Telegraph article from a few days ago. The headline is NHS staff who refuse the vaccine, this is the flu vaccine, may be banned from treating patients. They're saying doctors and nurses who refuse to have a flu jab this winter could be banned from working with patients, the NHS regulator has warned. Despite the threat posed by the flu, nearly one third of frontline healthcare workers had not been vaccinated. Experts believe this exaggerated the pressures faced by hospitals due to higher than necessary absence through sickness, as well as unvaccinated staff spreading the virus, among patients without necessarily falling ill themselves. So that's the situation. Mandatory vaccines for NHS staff, and I wanted to get your view on that.
Yeah, well, they've been pushing this for a while, Mike, and I do work with the EU, the paperwork that's coming through that the public won't see is that they're really keen to ensure that all governments are vaccinating their medical staff. Most physicians and nurses aren't silly. That's why most of them don't opt to get the flu vaccine. But they're pressuring them. They're pulling clinics, even in where they go to get their cup of coffee. There's people there kind of, you know, prone to give them a vaccine, just sort of perched and waiting. And as you'll see from some of the other slides in a second, this is all propaganda. You know, this nonsense about if you're not vaccinated, then you're a danger to the patient. They've been doing this, been banging on about this rubbish for year after year after year. And when you look at the data do not support their point of view.
Okay, well, let's move on to the next one here, because the Telegraph saying Public Health England withholding vaccines results makes it impossible to establish if drugs could be harmful. And I've got the wrong text on that, Graham, but But really, what the point here that we need to make is that if we look at the effect or the number of flu cases since the flu vaccine was introduced, the figures don't seem to stack up. And the headline here, Public Health England withholding vaccine results, makes it impossible to establish if drugs could be harmful. But you wanted to highlight this. Well, we've taken some of the statistics from Public Health England, put them into a graph here, showing the number of outbreaks of flu within the schools, for example. And the point you're making is that since 2013, the number of outbreaks have gone through the roof.
Yeah, their data do not support their argument. They're, you know, what we have now, look, we have massive bias in science, you know, and some would say corruption. Presently, we don't have any level from government all the way down that isn't captured by the drug industry. And, you know, I try to be diplomatic, but it's becoming harder and harder and harder. And you've got Public Health England. These are the people charged with protecting the health of us and our children. And, you know, and they're breaking the law. You've got government organizations with people sitting on the committees that are connected to the drugs they're trying to bring in. You've got drug companies fraudulently gerrymandering research. And hopefully there's a slide on there will show you how dangerous that is with a case in Ireland at the moment.
Right. Well, we'll come on to that. But I wanted to reinforce this graph because that's outbreaks of flu with respect to schools. But if we look at the data as a whole, this is from Public Health England. Again, this is respiratory infections increase after vaccinations, how you've labelled this. But the number of outbreaks of flu, and if we look at the total number of outbreaks of flu since 2013, we had 112 in 2013, and the number is just rising ever since. So 687 in 2014, 656 in 2015, 1,114 in 2016, and 2,095 in 2017. And in fact, if you look at the four main categories that they highlight in their document, they separated out into care homes where you're seeing hospitals, schools and other. And in every case, since the introduction of the flu vaccine, the number of cases of flu has increased. And this can't be coincidental.
I think what you're going to notice, Mike, and what everyone's going to notice, is that when they start vaccinating, which is really late September, October, all the way through to January, February next year, everyone starts getting ill. And you just can't get rid of these blooming colds. They come and they go, and people with asthma have problems and all the rest of it. And I have maintained that, and others have maintained, that as soon as you start vaccinating, you alter the immune system and you affect the kind of, what you know, the immune system, the kind of community immune system. You start to allow these vaccines to rise. You start to, these strains to increase, the ones that normally are benign. You start to weaken immune systems. And you start to see this increase in respiratory outbreaks, which is absolutely reflected in their very own data.
So we've got vaccines for preventing influenza in healthy adults. Sorry, this is a scientific paper which is saying the flu vaccine had no effect on hospital admissions or complication rates. It's in the literature.
Sure. And you can, you know, and if you produce enough papers and people are making enough money, you can produce any result you want. And the problem we've got now is 90% of the stuff in the literature is biased. You have to try and get independent. Up until this year, this organization was deemed to be very independent. And you've got to get your flu vaccine, because otherwise you're going to go into hospital and you're going to cost the NHS loads of money. But the evidence demonstrates clearly that it doesn't necessarily prevent people from from hospital admissions or complication rates from that. So the reality is, once again, it doesn't appear to work.
And so that paper that we've just shown there is from the Cochrane Systematic Review. Now, you mentioned this Irish situation, and here we've got the British Medical Journal. The Irish government being sued, it says, in documents obtained through the pre-trial discovery process, prosecutors suing the Irish Minister of Health, Health Services Executive, Health Products Regulatory Authority and GSK have found a string of GSK post-marking safety reports that show a striking difference in the number and frequency of adverse events reported for three GSK pandemic vaccines approved and used across the world. And we have some figures on the right-hand side there. First of all, you wanted to highlight the figures for the vaccine itself, for the first vaccine, which is which one is that? Pandemrix.
Yeah, well, this is actually an ongoing court case. So this is pre-trial. It's about to go to trial proper, I think. In that this the Irish government, different departments in the Irish government to do with health, are being sued by various persons. And this is a swine flu vaccine called Pandemrix. And this, if you look at the top there, it says this is an internal GlaxoSmithKline report. This is their own data that they didn't release. I think the Irish Medical Agency and I think the European Medicine Agency or Medicines Agencies both had access to this data. It shows clearly the vaccine they chose to give to people had thousands of adverse events, over 1,100 serious adverse events when they were testing it, and 47 deaths were associated with it. There was another one called Arapanrix, but the interesting thing here, Mike, is when you look to the third vaccine, which did not contain something called ASO3, which is an adjuvant added to the vaccine to rev up the immune system, it didn't contain that. There's no deaths, there's no serious outcomes, and all the rest of it. And the problem here is, Mike, this was not released to the public. The public didn't know this, as far as we can tell. And the public was then given this other vaccine. Now, if you were a member of the public and you were shown that data, would you want to get that vaccine on the left with the red loop around it? I don't think you would.
No, I don't think so. So, just
before you get, yeah, absolutely. This is very important. This ASO3, which has got squalene in it, and squalene is a natural thing you find in the body. What you don't want to do is you don't want to inject things which the immune system is going to start to attack that's going to be naturally in your own body, because then your vaccine is going to start to attack, your immune system is going to start to attack you. The new vaccine they're pushing for, called Fluad, for old age pensioners, if you like, people over the age 60, 65, has this ASO3 in it. Or, sorry, has a version of it, a different version of it, with squalene. I think it's MF59C.1, but it's the same sort of thing. It's got a squalene adjuvant. And it's very, very, in my opinion, look at this data, you would not want that.
No, indeed. And just to finish this off then, as you say, ASO3 contains squalene. And this is a quote from a book called Vaccine A, The Covert Government Experiments That's Killing Our Soldiers. And of course, this seems to be linked to, is this Gulf War Syndrome it's linked to? Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, and the quote from the book here says, when UCLA Medical School's Michael Whitehouse and Francis Beck injected squalene combined with other materials into rats and guinea pigs back in the 1970s, few oils were more effective at causing the animal versions of arthritis and multiple sclerosis, writes Matsumoto in 1999. Dr. Johnny Lorentzen, an immunologist at Sweden's Karolinska Institute, proved that on injection, otherwise benign molecules like squalene can stimulate a self-destructive immune response, even though they occur naturally in the body. Other research institutes have also shown that the immune system makes antibodies to squalene, but only after it is injected. There is a danger associated with this. But you've got to ask why they keep putting this stuff in these vaccines.
Well, you've got to ask why they keep vaccinating. Because what we have here, we have a centuries old or longer industry that has proven to be completely unsafe and untrustworthy. And what we now should demand is we should demand transparency in research. And you're seeing some of those cases, one in particular to do with the Irish authorities that appear to have covered up data or certainly didn't release it to the public. You have thousands upon thousands of articles on this all over the place on the web, and you have God knows how many research papers I presented here and in other venues and other formats. So we need transparency, and this is the problem, Mike. We don't have transparency. We've basically got a captured industry now. Captured government and captured regulatory authorities by the drug industry.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much, Graham. Apologies, the video wasn't functioning there for us. But just before you go, I wanted to mention that you will be speaking at the Alternative View 9.1 event on Sunday the 2nd of December in London. This is Crown Plaza, London, Kensington. Tickets are available from alternativeview.co.uk. So what will you be speaking about?
Well, we're going to develop the my areas that my interests are in are obviously vaccines and health and also science in general. And I have a great interest in artificial intelligence and how it affects the brain and how it impacts health. And we're going to develop this. We're going to use some very, very interesting science, and we're going to use also some theoretical concepts, and we're going to project where we think AI is going to take us. So hold on to your seats there, because it's going to be very, very, very interesting, the stuff we're going to cover.
Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much for joining us today, Graham. Much appreciated. What will you be speaking at about at that event?
We'll be speaking at some of the actual topics that we've covered on today's show, Mike. But
right.
More broadly, the information, say, fascist, corporatist takeover of our democracies and our political speech, which is happening right now, this week.
Well, okay, let's move on here, because you mentioned John McCain earlier in the program, Patrick, and well, this is Medium, an article in Medium from the Atlantic Council, hashtag troll tracker, Kremlin celebrates McCain's legacy. And let's just have a quick quote from this then. What does it say? State-funded RT, for example, published at least three articles in which it accused the senator of supporting Ukrainian Nazis. Another state-funded media outlet, Sputnik News, published an article titled John McCain was the embodiment of US deep state-journalist, in which the interviewee, Patrick Henningsen, accused McCain of aligning himself with neo-Nazi factions in Ukraine. Henningsen is a conspiracy blogger and Kremlin supporter who runs 21st Century Newswire. I'm not sure that that's quite what it's called, but anyway, a 9/11 truther site. It should not be considered a credible, sorry, he should not be considered a credible commentator. There are a number of things to deal with there. First of all, the allegation that John McCain is not or did not align himself with neo-Nazi factions in Ukraine, is that a fair statement?
Well, I think it is, Mike. That he did or didn't?
Well, they're claiming that he didn't. You say that he did.
Yeah, well, if you go back to this article, this is from the Atlantic Council. We'll talk about them in a minute. This is a good example of gaslighting, if you understand what this concept is. So they've quoted saying RT published three articles which accuse McCain of supporting Ukrainian Nazis. Now, you just take that snapshot for a minute, Mike. And how many total articles or reports are there of Ukrainian neo-Nazi factions and the very ones that John McCain was holding rallies with before the U.S.-backed coup in the Ukraine? Maybe in the hundreds or thousands, if you want to talk about the entirety of the global information sphere, they've cherry-picked the Russian network, RTs, in order to sort of discredit any conversation or anything about John McCain aligning himself with fascists or neo-Nazi-linked organizations in the Ukraine, which is a fact. In fact, they even show the pictures in the article, Mike. So that's another type of gaslighting propaganda. They show the evidence of the very thing that they're trying to eschew and then discredit somebody like me. Not only that, Mike, this is the Atlantic Council, the NATO-funded think tank, and their propaganda arm, I call it the disinformation lab. They call it the digital forensics lab. They can't even get the title of our website right. It's 21st Century Wire. So that shows you the level of, so they've, I know because that mistake has been made before, Mike, on other hit pieces. So they've basically copied this 25-year-old recent university leaver who's assistant director of the digital forensic lab. She's plagiarized or copied and pasted this hit piece section from another article without checking. She doesn't even know the name of our website. That's not very impressive. A 9/11 conspiracy, 9/11 truther site. We don't have very many 9/11 articles at 21st Century Wire, unfortunately. But the ones we do have are excellent, but there are only a dozen of them. On the other hand, we have 8,000 other articles and videos on many, many different topics over the last decade. So what they're trying to do is pigeonhole us as a conspiracy site, because this is what the other propaganda sort of political attack vehicles that the establishment have, like Snopes and so forth. And these are all these organizations working together, Mike.
There is a Third Reich research institute created in Kiev.
Well, this, unfortunately, there's a lot of this going on in the Ukraine, and the Atlantic Council, which has a NATO agenda, which is to paint the Ukraine as a burgeoning paradise and utopia of democratic freedoms. There is a massive, very real Nazi movement and a very real fascist movement, but these are the shock troops that John McCain himself relied upon in order to take power by force and overthrow the democratically elected president in February of 2014. So I'm not making this up, Mike. There's just a lot of Nazi activity in the Ukraine, and unfortunately, it's so bad, even the Ukrainian mainstream TV is basically pushing back on some of the Banderite activities this week as well. If you want to go to see good reports on this subject, go to stalkerzone.com, I believe is the website. That'll show you a lot of great translated material from Russian language into English. That's a service that that website provides. Mike, the case is overwhelming, but yet, according to NATO and the Atlantic Council, it's not happening.
Now, of course, we were talking about Panorama at the beginning of the program. And the question in my mind then is, who are the sort of experts that, that the likes of the BBC and so on are going to? It's not Julian Assange, although it seems that Julian Assange has managed to get his internet access back. So Julian Assange and WikiLeaks have built themselves up to be somewhere where leaked documents end up. And these leaked documents should be a resource for the media.
They should. And WikiLeaks has a perfect record, Mike, in just over 10 years. So they work very hard to vet the leaks that they get. So no one can accuse WikiLeaks of publishing false information or forging documents. But yet a lot of those accusations have been made by other so-called, well, I wouldn't call it whistleblower organizations, but online investigation or open source online investigation websites like Bellingcat.
So we're not going to use WikiLeaks as a useful resource. We're going to try to punish that organization as much as possible for being there.
Discredit it, punish it.
But we are going to use the likes of Bellingcat. Meet the Internet Researchers Unmasking Russian Assassins is the NPR headline here. So you get, you know, the Bellingcat really being promoted at every opportunity by the mainstream media at the moment as being the experts du jour.
So their PR company is just doing nonstop media opportunities for Bellingcat right now. It's a full court press public relations. If you go back to this article, this is from the United States state-run overseas propaganda arm, NPR, but they're doing a lot of domestic propaganda now, especially after the repeal of the Smith-Mundt Act. It's, domestic propaganda is now legal in the United States by the government. I know that sounds strange, but unfortunately we live in strange times. But what you can see, Mike, is the establishment are basically have sidelined and pushed down, demonized WikiLeaks. Then they've created their own WikiLeaks. Bellingcat is the establishment's own Frankenstein version of WikiLeaks, and they're presenting that to the public as their WikiLeaks, basically. So this is the organization that you should pay attention to, and everything they say is true, and the media don't vet, don't scrutinize anything presented or question anything presented by Bellingcat, nor do government. What does this remind you of, Mike? What other NGO have we been covering quite a lot in recent years that is untouchable by the mainstream media, is unquestioned by the government, gets funding from our governments? What does this remind you of? What NGO?
Tell us.
The White Helmets.
Okay.
And both of these organizations, Bellingcat and the White Helmets, produce the made-to-order custom propaganda that fits the perfect narrative in order to convict the enemies of the West, or the enemies of NATO, Syria, Russia, who's next? This is their job. Nothing that Bellingcat has ever produced is at all inconvenient or uncomfortable for the US or UK governments. And so now that we've said that, they'll probably get to work and try to look like they're doing a legitimate job.
Well, look, at the start of the program, we used the term rapid response mechanism. And of course, that's one aspect of what's going on because we've got government and media working together here to produce this common narrative. But of course, there's another catchphrase that Theresa came up with this summer, and that is fusion doctrine. And this is the idea that government, intelligence services, media, private sector, all start, and NGOs all start to work together on various things. So let's have a look at this, because Caitlin Johnson here had tweeted out, you know, anti-war critics of establishment politics being kicked off Facebook. But this is in the run-up to the midterms in the United States. Facebook closing down a whole load of accounts and kicking people off Facebook who they consider to be trolls or...
800 pages in total.
Okay.
800 different pages.
And we have Prop or Not, and you can tell us who they are in a second. They've tweeted this out saying, well, look at that. Facebook removed some of the most important grey, black Russian propaganda outlets from the platform. Bravo, Facebook, better late than never. So a big thank you for this. All of these cross-platform and have websites, but one thing at a time. So Prop or Not, who are these people? They seem to be saying here that they have lobbied and done a very good job to make sure that certain pages have been taken off Facebook, but they're not going to stop there. They're going to make sure that these, or the owners of these Facebook pages, are taken off the internet in total. This gets beyond a joke.
You can tell by the language used by Prop or Not here, the sort of nasty backbiting language that they use in those tweets. It's the same exact nasty backbiting language that we see from some of the members of these Atlantic Council-funded organizations on social media. We could put up a bunch of examples of their antics online, Mike. I think the important thing here, Mike, is that just imagine, you said that run up to the midterms, okay, U.S. elections, in a couple of weeks. So you have the taxpayers in the West funding NATO, follow me on this, then NATO is funding the Atlantic Council and the disinformation labs. Let's call that a quango, right? We'll call that a quango. It's receiving some money from the public, okay? And then they're advising, Atlantic Council, this military industrial think tank, is advising Facebook and Twitter on whose pages to delete during an election cycle, which articles and speech needs to be erased from the internet, okay? That's a military, quasi-military organization giving instructions to private companies on what is allowable content online. That's kind of disturbing. That's beyond election meddling. That's beyond influence. That is manipulation of the democratic process. Russia didn't do that in 2016, okay? That is being done in the West. And there, Mike... there, Mike, is the modus operandi of Russiagate, okay? Yes, it isolated Putin. Yes, it isolated Trump. Yes, it increased tensions. Yes, it started another arms race with NATO. But the real reason for Russiagate and the whole fake conspiracy theory that Russia put Trump in the White House is exactly what we're seeing right now, to provide a fake justification for the state and its little quango organizations to clamp down and censor the internet along with Silicon Valley corporations that are complicit. A fake justification for a totalitarian censorship clampdown. That's what Russiagate was all about. And we're seeing it right now in front of your eyes, Mike. And I'm telling you, if people are not outraged by what's happening this last week, right in front of everybody's faces, if you're not outraged about this, good luck to you. Good luck with your democracy.
Just in 2 seconds, who is Prop or Not?
Prop or Not is a shadowy organization. we probably run by the Atlantic Council. I don't know for sure, but it seems to be of that ilk. And the Washington Post used them as a source to put forward a list of 200 websites in the U.S. and in Western Europe that are supposedly coordinated Russia propaganda, included many long-running alternative media outlets. So this was basically to provide a censorship list, and this is very similar to some of the lists that some of the other so-called academics, are using in the fake news crisis. And those are definitely being refashioned and then presented to the not-so-brave members of Facebook, Twitter, and Google, who are then using that to basically plug into their algorithms of URLs and things like that, information to suppress, websites to ban, people to delete, and so forth. So this is quite a nefarious operation, Mike. And Prop or Not, Well, it's they don't want to be identified. So the establishment is using a fake source to provide to smear alternative sources of information. Very, very professional.
Good stuff. Now, let's move on to Mark Curtis, who has tweeted this out. It's a quote. It's the BBC's duty to her audience to scrutinise uncomfortable subjects. And he's saying that that is BBC excuse for giving airtime to Tommy Robinson, a duty which extends to its coverage of UK foreign policy and which it fails to uphold approximately 100% of the time. It is the BBC's duty to our audience to scrutinise uncomfortable subjects. It's interesting, this, because we'll talk about Tommy Robinson in a second, but this policy doesn't seem to extend to other areas. So, for example, the BBC has just produced an editorial policy on how they're going to report on climate change. And the issue of balance comes up. And they ask the question, do we need to have a Freudian slip potentially there, to have a climate change denier on when the consensus in the scientific community is that climate change is proven? Do we need to have a climate change denier on? And they've said, no, we don't need to. We don't need to scrutinise these people's views. We just present the scientific evidence as the consensus reality that we all should be accepting unquestioningly is established. So that applies to climate change. But in the case of politics and the political arena, apparently that doesn't apply. So there's a bit of a double standard going on here.
Sure. And as Curtis rightly points out here, that doesn't apply to any foreign policy coverage. We want to get into the details of why. Well, we will actually get into a few details of why the BBC are giving raising the Tommy Robinson avatar up to such prominence. And we'll talk about that in a second, more about that.
But in the meantime, then, we're raising somebody else back up to prominence, because Mr. Chowdhury apparently is going to be freed on parole. Is that a coincidence that we're promoting Tommy, or the BBC, Tommy Robinson's going to get BBC airtime at the same time that Anjem Chowdhury is about to be released from prison? Is that a coincidence, do you
think?
It's
absolutely a coincidence, Mike. You are one of the best analysts in pointing out coincidences in media. And if you go back, just look at this right here. What you're seeing here with Anjem Chowdhury, that is an actor. That's an actor playing a role. Just like Abu Hamza, does everyone remember The Hook? Okay, Abu Hamza was playing a role. He was the darling of the tabloid media. They loved him, couldn't get enough of him. If Islamic extremism had a divisive media-friendly character, it was Hamza, and now it's Chowdhury. So the timing is uncanny, Mike, actually, with this latest breaking story.
Now, Little John here, the headline is, if Islamist hate preacher Anjem Chowdhury is still genuinely dangerous, keep him in jail. But Little John here reminding us that Chowdhury has links to intelligence.
Well, he does. And Little John pointed out that, like Abu Hamza, Chowdhury is more likely to be an MI5 informant or some sort of government informant. And so all these characters, Mike, whether they're on the right or whether they're on the left, they can be used, and throughout history they've been used and manipulated by agencies. This is an art form in America, by the way, with the FBI. Throughout history, you can look at FBI informants have penetrated every single organization, or planted or used in every single activist organization, every single political organization, from the beginning of time, basically. And that's so that they can control the extremist wings of both left and right, or even environmental groups. I think you have quite a few interesting stories about environmental groups with informants penetrating the highest levels in Britain. So why would you think that that wouldn't be the case with the radical mosques? Well, of course it is, and there's plenty of documentation to that effect. I think Dr. Nafis Ahmed did quite a few interesting investigations really proving just that, as has the author Mark Curtis as well. So you can go check out their work online on this actual subject, Mike.
Okay. Now, on Saturday, Brian was at the Leave Means Leave event, which took place in Southwest in well, in southern Devon anyway. I can't remember exactly where it was, but we'll have more on that on Wednesday. But what was clear once again was that they absolutely do not want to discuss the military and what's going to happen with the military following Brexit. Well, the Italian job, because Mark Lancaster, the Armed Forces Minister, was in Rome just over the weekend to bring forward our defence relationship between the UK and Italy. So he highlighted how our armed forces can work closer together. He was at a Protection of Cultural Heritage event. And then after that event, he went on to discuss future cooperation between the UK and Italy with the Italian government and Italian defence partners, as they're calling it. Yet another bilateral sidling up together, let's make a deal sort of thing, because of course that's part and parcel of what's going to be the case after Brexit, which is EU military unification, and therefore there can be no Brexit. But look, we've got to leave it there for today. Thank you very much for joining us, Patrick, and thank you for joining us. We'll be back at the same time on Wednesday. If you like what we do and you're not a subscriber, we do appreciate your support, because we can only do what we do with that help. So if you'd like to take out a subscription, the details are on the UK Column website, which is at ukcolumn.org. And we will see you at 1 o'clock, as I say, on Wednesday. Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.